Travis's letter of February 24th, 1836, the Victory or Death letter, is the best known of his calls to arms and appeals to aid for the Texian defenders of the Alamo. Primary sources like the Travis letter are essential for historical writing and research. Primary sources like that are the bedrock on which history is made. He sent another similar letter in the hands of once again to Sam Houston on February 25th, and carrying that letter saved Seguin's life, but he would later return to perform a service for the dead. On March 3rd, 1836, Travis's second cousin, James Butler Bonham, who was 29 years of age, arrived and successfully entered the Alamo bearing what he thought might be good news. He shared that several hundred men were answering Travis's call and were on their way to reinforce the defenders. Unfortunately, the men that Bonham reported were coming were the men led by Fannin, and Bonham had no way of knowing that Fannin and the reinforcements so eagerly awaited and needed had turned around and returned to Goliad. There would be no help. That day, March 3rd, was a Thursday, and Travis set his pen to work for the last of his known appeals for aid. He wrote the following: Commandancy of the Alamo, Bear, March 3rd, 1836. Sir, in the present confusion of the political authorities of the country, and in the absence of the Commander-in-Chief, I beg leave to communicate to you the situation of this garrison. You have doubtless seen my official report of the action of the 25th, made on that day to General Sam Houston, together with the various communications heretofore sent by express. I shall therefore confine myself to what has transpired since that date. From the 25th to the present date, the enemy have kept up a bombardment from two howitzers, one a 5.5-inch and the other an 8-inch, and a heavy cannonade from two long 9-pounders mounted on a battery on the opposite side of the river at the distance of 400 yards from our walls. During this period, the enemy have been busily employed in encircling us with entrenched encampments on all sides at the following distances, to wit: in Bear, 400 yards west, in La Valletta, 300 yards south at the Powder House, 1,000 yards east by south, on the Ditch, 800 yards northeast, and at the Old Mill, 800 yards north. Notwithstanding all this, a company of 32 men from Gonzales made their way into us on the morning of the 1st at 3 o'clock, and Colonel J.B. Bonham, a courier from Gonzales, got in this morning at 11 o'clock without molestation. I have so fortified this place that the walls are generally proof against cannonballs, and I still continue to entrench on the inside and strengthen the walls by throwing up the dirt. At least 200 shells have fallen inside of our works without having injured a single man. Indeed, we have been so fortunate as not to lose a man from any cause, and we have killed many of the enemy. The spirits of my men are still high, although they have had much to depress them. We have contended for 10 days against an enemy whose numbers are variously estimated at from 1,500 to 6,000 men, with General Ramir Ciesma and Colonel Battray, the aide-de-camp of Santa Anna, at their head. A report was circulated that Santa Anna himself was with the enemy, but I think it was false. A reinforcement of about 1,000 men is now entering Bear from the west, and I think it more than probable that Santa Anna is now in town from the rejoicing we hear. Colonel Fannin is said to be on the march to this place with reinforcements, but I fear it is not true, as I have repeatedly sent to him for aid without receiving any. Colonel Bonham, my special messenger, arrived at La Bahia 14 days ago with a request for aid. And on the arrival of the enemy in Bear 10 days ago, I sent an express to Colonel Fannin, which arrived in Goliad on the next day, urging him to send us reinforcements. None have yet arrived. I look to the colonies alone for aid. Unless it arrives soon, I shall have to fight the enemy on his own terms. I will, however, do the best I can under the circumstances, and I feel confident that the determined valor and desperate courage heretofore evinced by my men will not fail them in the last struggle. And although they may be sacrificed to the vengeance of a Gothic enemy, the victory will cost the enemy so dear that it will be worse for him than a defeat. I hope your honorable body will hasten on reinforcements, ammunition, and provisions to our aid as soon as possible. We have provisions for 20 days for the men we have. Our supply of ammunition is limited. At least 500 pounds of cannon powder and 200 rounds of 6, 9, 12, and 18-pound balls, 10 kegs of rifle powder, and a supply of lead should be sent to this place without delay under a sufficient guard. If these things are promptly sent and large reinforcements are hastened to this frontier, this neighborhood will be the great and decisive battleground. The power of Santa Anna is to be met here or in the colonies. We had better meet them here than to suffer a war of desolation to rage in our settlements. A blood-red banner waves from the Church of Bear and in the camp above us, in token that the war is one of vengeance against rebels. They have declared us as such and demanded that we should surrender at discretion, or that this garrison should be put to the sword. Their threats have had no influence on me or my men, but to make all fight with desperation and that high-souled courage which characterizes the patriot, who is willing to die in defense of his country's liberty and his own honor. The citizens of this municipality are all our enemies except those who have joined us heretofore. We have but 3 Mexicans now in the fort. Those who have not joined us in this extremity should be declared public enemies, and their property should aid in paying the expenses of the war. The bearer of this will give your honorable body a statement more in detail should he escape through the enemy lines. God in Texas, victory or death, your obedient servant, William Barrett Travis, Lieutenant Colonel Commanding. Friday, March 4th, was the 11th day of the siege, and on that day, Santa Anna held a council of war to make the plan of attack with his officers. Some suggested that they delay until the arrival of more artillery that would be more capable of breaking through the Alamo defenses. These officers recognized that they could save the lives of many Mexican soldiers by following this course of action. And some of the officers were also disturbed by Santa Anna's direction that any prisoners taken in the upcoming attack must be summarily executed. There would be no mercy. Santa Anna ignored any suggestions or protests, and the attack was set for Sunday, March 6th. On Saturday, March 5th, the sun rose for the last time for the Alamo defenders. The Mexican artillery that had been bombarding the Alamo since the arrival 12 days before fell silent, and the Mexican forces made ready for the attack. As March 5th turned into March 6th, on Sunday, under the cover of darkness, Santa Anna's forces advanced toward the Alamo. Travis and over 180 men would all be dead before sunrise. Francisco Ruiz, whose father, also named Francisco Ruiz, had signed the Texas Declaration of Independence, was the alcalde of San Antonio during the siege. And he provides the following account of the fall of the Alamo. On the 23rd day of February 1836, 2 o'clock p.m., General Santa Anna entered the city of San Antonio with a part of his army. This he effected without any resistance, the forces under the command of Travis, Bowie, and Crockett having on the same day at 8 o'clock in the morning learned that the Mexican army was on the banks of the Medina River. They concentrated in the fortress of the Alamo. In the evening, they commenced to exchange fire with guns, and from the 23rd of February to the 6th of March, in which the storming was made by Santa Anna, the roar of artillery and volleys of musketry were constantly heard. On the 6th of March at 3 o'clock, General Santa Anna, at the head of 4,000 men, advanced against the Alamo. The infantry, artillery, and cavalry had formed about 1,000 veras from the walls of said fortress. The Mexican army charged and were twice repulsed by the deadly fire of Travis's artillery, which resembled a constant thunder. At the third charge, the Toluca battalion commenced to scale the walls and suffered severely. Out of 800 men, 130 were only left alive. When the Mexican army had succeeded in entering the walls, I, with the political chief, Jefe Politico, Don Ramon Musquiz, and other members of the corporation accompanied the curate, Don Refugio de la Garza, who, by Santa Anna's orders, had assembled during the night at a temporary fortification erected in Potrero Street, with the object of attending the wounded, etc. As soon as the storming commenced, we crossed the bridge on Commerce Street with this object in view, and about 100 yards from the same, a party of Mexican dragoons fired upon us and compelled us to fall back on the river and place we occupied before. Half an hour had elapsed when Santa Anna sent one of his aides-de-camps with an order for us to come before him. He directed me to call on some of the neighbors to come up with carts to carry the dead to the cemetery and also to accompany him, as he was desirous to have Colonels Travis, Bowie, and Crockett shown to him. On the north battery of the fortress lay the lifeless body of Colonel Travis on the gun carriage, shot only in the forehead. Toward the west, in the small fort opposite the city, we found the body of Colonel Crockett. Colonel Bowie was found dead in his bed in one of the rooms of the south side. Santa Anna, after all the Mexicans were taken out, ordered wood to be brought to burn the bodies of the Texians. He sent a company of dragoons with me to bring wood and dry branches from the neighboring forest. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they commenced laying the wood and dry branches upon which a file of dead bodies was placed. More wood was piled on them, another file brought, and in this manner they were all arranged in layers. Kindling wood was distributed through the pile, and about 5 o'clock in the evening it was lighted. The dead Mexicans of Santa Anna were taken to the graveyard, but, not having sufficient room for them, I ordered some of them to be thrown in the river, which was done on the same day. Santa Anna's loss was estimated at 1,600 men. These were the flower of his army. The gallantry of the few Texians who defended the Alamo was really wondered at by the Mexican army. Even the generals were astonished at their vigorous resistance and how dearly victory had been bought. The generals who, under Santa Anna, participated in the storming of the Alamo were Juan Amador, Castrillon, Ramirez Sesma, and Andrade. The men burnt numbered 182. I was an eyewitness, for as alcalde of San Antonio, I was with some of the neighbors collecting the dead bodies and placing them on the funeral pyre. Signed, Francisco Antonio Ruiz. P.S. My father was Don Francisco Ruiz, a member of the Texas Convention. He signed the Declaration of Independence on the second day of March, 1836. That was the first published account by Tejano of the events at the Alamo. But what of Juan Seguin?
You You're listening to Texas History Lessons, a slow walk through Texas history made in Texas by a Texan for everyone everywhere.
Following the victory at San Jacinto on April 21, 1836, Colonel Juan Nepomuceno Seguin was given command of a small troop to defend the Texas western frontier. And beginning in November of 1836, Seguin occupied San Antonio for 4 months. And during this time, he interred the remains of the Alamo dead. And he penned the following report on March 13, 1837. In conformity with the orders from General Felix Houston, dated some time back, I caused the honors of war to be paid to the remains of the heroes of Alamo on the 25th of February last. The ashes were found in 3 heaps. I caused a coffin to be prepared, neatly covered with black. The ashes from the 2 smallest heaps were placed therein, and with a view to attach additional solemnity to the occasion, were carried to the parish church in Bear, whence it moved with the procession at 4 o'clock on the afternoon of the day above mentioned. The procession passed through the principal street of the city, crossed the river, and passing through the principal avenue arrived at the spot whence part of the ashes had been collected. The procession halted. The coffin was placed upon the spot, and 3 volleys of musketry were discharged over it by one of the companies. Proceeding onwards to the 2nd spot from whence the ashes were taken, where the same honors were done, and thence to the principal spot, in place of interment, the coffin was then placed upon the large heap of ashes, when I addressed a few words to the battalion, and the assemblage present in honor of the occasion in the Castilian language, as I do not possess the English. Major Western then addressed the concourse in the latter tongue. The coffin and all the ashes were then interred, and 3 volleys of musketry were fired over the grave by the whole battalion, with an accuracy that would do honor to the best disciplined troops. We then marched back to quarter in the city, with music and colors flying. Half our guns were not fired, because I had no powder for the purpose, but every honor was done within the reach of my scanty means. I hope as a whole my efforts may meet your approbation. And let's close with what has been recorded as the speech that Colonel Seguin gave at the interment ceremony. Companions in arms, these remains which we have the honor of carrying on our shoulders are those of the valiant heroes who died in the Alamo. Yes, my friends, they prefer to die 1,000 times rather than submit themselves to the tyrant's yoke. What a brilliant example, deserving of being noted in the pages of history. The spirit of liberty appears to be looking out from its elevated throne, with its pleasing mien and pointing to us, saying, "There are your brothers, Travis, Bowie, Crockett, and others whose valor places them in the rank of my heroes." Yet, soldiers and fellow citizens, these are the worthy beings who, by the twist of fate, during the present campaign, delivered their bodies to the ferocity of their enemies, who, barbarously treated as beasts, were bound by their feet and dragged to this spot, where they were reduced to ashes. The venerable remains of our worthy companions as witnesses, I invite you to declare to the entire world, Texas shall be free and independent, or we shall perish in glorious combat. And we're going to close with that. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Derek McLennan for providing the theme music. I'll be back soon with more Texas history. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Be kind. Adios.